Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum, joined by the Kyle Snyder of Wrestling Journalism. That's Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Why Kyle Snyder? Because he wins in the clutch and he doesn't get rattled. You earned it. Congratulations, Andy.
I have no response to that. I don't even know what to say to that.
What, you want Gable or Sanderson, or do you want another
I'm
comparison?
Not in Snyder's league.
Whose league are you then?
I don't know.
You're up there.
I don't know. Snyder's, man, is he the greatest of all time in college wrestling with what he's done in college? Is Kale? Who is it, Kyle?
I'm putting you on Kale. The spot. I'm saying Kale. And I think Kyle Snyder's in the conversation because of what he did internationally, but I'm still going with Kale Sanderson as the top guy, 159-0. I understand people are going to say he redshirted, and a guy like Spencer Lee or Yanni have not redshirted, so that certainly bolsters their case if they continue on. But Kale Sanderson, 159-0, was dominant. He's still the guy for me.
It depends on what your criteria is, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to throw in international stuff... And what guys have accomplished in college, Kyle Snyder's done is unprecedented. I mean, it's unbelievable too. I couldn't be more impressed with the fact that he goes up and gives up 65 pounds and beats Adam Kuhn. That to me is one of the coolest feats that I have seen in college wrestling in 20 years.
And I hope it's a credit to Adam Kuhn that we're saying, Adam Kuhn, you're outstanding.
Yes.
Because we're putting Kyle Snyder on a pedestal, we're putting Adam Kuhn on a pedestal too, because he is truly remarkable. And it's been truly remarkable to be able to watch this journey and be part of this in a significant way, to be behind the scenes on this and get to interact with him on occasion with interviews on the mat and different occasions. The guy is the standard bearer for what our sport is going to be. I mean, and I think we kind of take it for granted because he makes it look seamless and pretty standard, but what he's doing, winning a world championship at the age of 19, Andy, in 2015, after he places second at the NCAA championships, and then wins the Olympics the next year, and then wins the Worlds the next year after that. It's just what he's doing is off the charts, unbelievable. And what John Smith did, winning six World and Olympic titles in a row, Kyle Snyder has three more to go just to tie that record. But if there's going to be someone, it's going to be Kyle Snyder because he's on track right now and looks like Sadulayev's going to be at a different weight class, so he doesn't have to contend with him. So Kyle Snyder's on a great run right now. We get to watch and experience it. It's special.
Yeah, and we talked about this off air a little bit. Just the way he's conducted himself, it's been incredible. I mean, you couldn't handpick really a better ambassador for wrestling. You know, not just Ohio State wrestling, not just NCAA wrestling, but for wrestling as a whole. I think it's been really admirable how Kyle has handled himself, the example he has set, the things that he stands for. He's got it all going for him right now. And you know, not just Kyle, but we get some really good examples in the United States right now. Jordan Burroughs, has been exemplary in the way that he has conducted himself on and off the mat. And I, you know, I just think that there were so many really positive things for you know, guys, you know, the humility that they showed this past weekend. And I think tremendous examples for young wrestlers. You know, Spencer Lee coming off the mat after pinning Nathan Tomasello, and the, you know, the praise that he had for Tomasello, the respect that he showed him. I think of Mark Hall, you know, 10 minutes after he's lost in the NCAA finals, or 15 minutes, whatever it was, Bo Nickel gets the pin. The very first guy out there to greet Bo Nickel coming off the mat, Mark Hall. I thought that was really cool. I think, really cool. You know, and we could go on and on. There are so many examples of guys that, you know, I just couldn't be more impressed with. I think time and again over the course of those 3 days in Cleveland, I think, man, these guys are like 18 to 22, 23 years old. And I think of what a knucklehead I was at that age. And it's just been really impressive. Some of the things that we got going for us as a sport right now.
And I think that we're in an era where there's this respect. I think that I didn't get a chance to watch the ESPN broadcast, but Kyle Dake was on there and said that it's more like performance art right now, and it's more of an art form, and you're just seeing these guys want to display their skills. The way I grew up understanding wrestling early when I was 17, 16, is that if you lost a match, it's supposed to destroy your world, and you're supposed to bury your head in the sand, and you're supposed to go away for a year and not show up again. That was the way I thought that wrestling would be, and it was partially the Iowan mentality. I can remember a guy named Eric Coble who had to fill in for Lincoln McIlravey at Iowa. He was just crushed when he lost matches, and not saying that it shouldn't affect you deeply, but I think these guys are more willing to get over it quickly. Bryce Meredith is being interviewed minutes after losing to Yanni, and he's given you reasons why the match was great, and he wanted to put on a show. And I think that Spencer Lee's comments before the finals, he said that we want to put on a show. Nick Siriano and I said, if we ever meet again, we're going to put on a show and make entertainment. And I think that's been a theme that Spencer Lee's had all year. So from what I've seen, and you've seen it a long time too, it seems like the sport really is in a different phase than it ever has been.
Yeah. To your point about Spencer, I think back to what was it, November? Early December, UNI Open. He comes off the mat. He goes, tech fall, or something like that, or tech fall. He comes off and he asked me, he goes, was that fun to watch? Or he asked me something along those lines. You know, he goes, I want to be entertaining. And, certainly there was nobody who was more entertaining out in Cleveland than Spencer Lee.
He was.
The show that he put on. It's incredible how he's been must-watch stuff all season, and then he went to another level out there. You get rid of that knee brace, moving so much better on his feet, so much more dynamic on his feet out there, and then gave him a little bit more flexibility. I'm not sure if he pins Tomasello in that position with that knee brace on.
That's possible. Yeah, you might be right on that.
But,
yeah.
Man, we saw him take it to another level, and just the fear that he strikes in opponents when he's on top. You know, to see Tomasello and Siriano both pick neutral, tremendous testament to his top game. We saw it in the Big Tens that Tomasello wasn't going underneath him. And then, to not just win the match 1-0 or whatever, you know, he was going to win it on. He went out and got points and rode him and turned him and then put him away. Iowa fans, you got to be pretty excited about having that guy in the stable for 3 more years.
I think the only thing that's disappointing is that you don't get to see him on the mat that much because he ends it so quick.
Yeah,
really. I mean, he gets out there and it's just tech fall. You get on top and it's just over. And it's something that I'm disappointed about that the NCAA won't do. And if they would understand this better, I've always felt like going in order of weight is just a mistake. Why would you put your best wrestler, the guy that you want to market the most, as the first weight class? You don't do that in boxing. You don't do it in MMA. You don't put Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather Jr. before someone who weighs more. Why make weight the factor? Make it based on what is the best fan potential for entertainment. So if we're talking about the entertainment value, you put the best guys last. I think that's a really smart marketing strategy. Why would you put Spencer Lee as the first match? Because you get to enjoy it And then you have to watch, usually, suffer through some pretty boring heavyweight matches. Let's mix it up and make the best match last.
Like, it's finals this year, though. Finals were great from start to finish.
Correct. So
how can you imagine if 84 would have been the last match of the tournament and there's a team title?
That would have been
right
unreal.
On the line?
Oh, you're right.
I'm not sure that there's been a more exciting 14 seconds in NCAA tournament history than that 14-second flurry with Martin and Nickel.
But you're right. But to your point, you have Ohio State and Penn State going head-to-head. Why wouldn't you put a match where it's a rematch of 2 years ago? It's the two teams fighting for the team race. Why wouldn't you put that match last?
I don't know.
I think the
Snyder-Kuhn matchup is certainly appealing to end it on. If Kuhn had won that one, let's say they start at 97 and Kuhn beats Kyle, then all of a sudden 84 comes down the wire and it's just Nickel versus Martin with no team title on the line. But, hindsight 2020.
Yeah, I guess
if it had played out that way, man, that would have been unbelievable. Can you imagine if an NCAA title flipped on one flurry like that?
Yeah, I say that's the risk you take. Put 184 at the end, no matter what, because those are the two teams that one of those two teams is going to win it. Just put it at the end. Make that the last match. And don't necessarily start at 197. Just mix and match. And maybe you put Kuhn and Snyder as the second to last match.
Yeah.
Just mix and match where you think it's going to be good for the team race. Why go in consecutive order? I know they pick that as the last match, and I don't think that's a bad way to finish it off with Kyle Snyder, but let's get innovative. Let's try some new things instead of the standard 125 to heavyweight. Let's mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm for that. I'm more
especially dual meets.
You know. That'd be entertaining.
Yeah, I think it could be fun.
Let's rock the boat a little bit. Now. Let's get rid of dual scoring the way it is
now. Yeah, I know.
Cumulative. Let's get a two-foot step out. You know, 2 feet out is a step out.
Yeah.
Let's shake things up a little bit. It's pretty good right now, though. I will say it's wrestling was really the wrestling was really entertaining in Cleveland every round.
Oh,
you know, and we've seen some finals that have kind of been ho-hum in the past. Mm-hmm. That was not the case. You know, you have Spencer coming out, scoring a couple takedowns. Seth Gross and Micic was entertaining. The Yanni Meredith match was must-watch stuff. Ronnie Perry hanging in there, putting a pretty good fight against Zane Rutherford. You know, the Nolf story is pretty incredible, coming back from what he came back from. Vincenzo shutting down Imar. How about Mark Hall and Zahid and that scramble?
It was unreal.
Yeah.
And I hope part of the entertainment value has come from the rule changes, that the mat's gotten a lot bigger. You have some of these out-of-bounds rules with stalling. I hope that that's part of the reason, because we go back to the finals and think about some of those. There have been some boring finals when you leave and just say none of those matches were really good at all. There were 3-2 or 2-1 and coin flips.
The 1-1 write-outs.
Yeah, I mean.
Even at 125 at times.
Yeah. And just, I think we've gotten away from that a little bit. Even on the tiebreakers, they've been pretty entertaining. And I'm glad with the product we have. I'm proud of the product that we have in the sport. And I think that we can continue to elevate that. And I know you're always going to nitpick on rules and what you think it needs to be, but man, we are in a good era for the sport across the board. It's fun.
Do you think that the finals were entertaining because we've changed the rules and promoted more action, or is it just because that we got mega talents coming through the system?
Probably right more now? Mega talents.
Yeah.
I'd say more on that way. I think the rules have been part of that, getting to that point. I think we've
gone a little bit too far with the rules in some senses, in that they've become pretty complex to the person flipping through the stations and trying to figure out why is this guy getting warned for stalling, for going out of bounds, for backing out, and then this time he wasn't, and then this time the guy who pushed him out of bounds was warned for stalling or even neutral danger. And I think as a sport, we've made it more complex and gone maybe in the wrong way in terms of making things easy on the casual fan, on the person just flipping through and trying to grow the audience. But They have become better from the standpoint. I think they've promoted more action. But I think it's finding the happy medium where it's simplifying and taking things out of the referee's hands. You know, that's why I like the idea of a 2-foot step out. You step out both feet out of bounds at the point. You know, so there's no ambiguity whether, you know, did this guy get pushed out? Is there action? Is, you know, what's going on there? Because I think that we're seeing a lot of inconsistency the way it's called from match to match, referee to referee.
Yeah, that's true. And I've seen that quite a bit, especially, like you say, the out of bounds rules. And I've just seen a lot of times where the referees get confused because there are times I've seen them forget to call the neutral danger zone, and the coaches and the fans are calling for a count, and they should be counting, but they're looking for back points or the fall, and then they just forget to call the neutral danger zone. And it is a confusing rule in that sense, and that you have to think about that and be on point. And some people aren't even up to speed that there's 4-point near fall anymore if you haven't been watching for the last few years. So it's certainly changed. It is a complex sport, and trying to explain it to people, it's difficult if you want to try to explain it to the casual fan. Not easy.
Boy, you better be good on top these days too and be able to score points on top, right? I mean, look at what Spencer did at 125. Look at Seth Gross at 133. He got taken down 5 times. Yeah. By Tariq Wilson and still won the match.
Yeah.
That's what it.
By 5,
what
a, right?
No, he won it, pinned him in OT.
Oh, yeah.
In
the
final. But, you know, he turned Micić in the finals, and that was a difference maker there. I mean, you just cannot get turned anymore and come from behind unless you have some top skills or you can take somebody feet to back. It's the 4-point near fall has really been a game changer.
Yeah. It's opened things wide.
Imagine if David Taylor had the 4-point.
He'd love it.
Wow.
He'd absolutely love it. It really does. It opens up the floodgates because you see a lot of these 17-2 tech falls, and these guys are saying, if I can get 4 points on top, why not take advantage of it? And a lot of guys are. It's changed the complexity and the dynamic of how we view the sport. And it's a lot of fun to see because it's good writing, good top game. That's fun to watch. That's entertaining.
So. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm pleased with how that went.
I like the fact that people are looking for points on top. They're not just looking to hold somebody down for a minute and get that point.
Yeah,
you know, and that's another thing too.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I used to be a big fan of the riding time point. I'm not such a big fan of riding.
I know you aren't. But hey, you said this, and we haven't even brought it up on our program, is that when was the last time a good wrestler or even a great wrestler has not been good on bottom?
Yep.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Who can you name? You have to get out from underneath.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So think of what an advantage it was for Spencer.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he's starting that match against Tomasello up 1-0, essentially. And same thing with Suriano when he 3-0 going to the third. And Suriano's got he picks neutral. That was to me, that was a little bit surprising to me that he went neutral. Because then you got to score a couple takedowns and hold him down and hope you don't get taken down somewhere along the way.
Yeah, you saw that quite a bit where guys know what's coming. Lezak's another example.
Yep.
Guys are going to pick neutral against Lezak almost every time, and there's times where they're picking top two more than they have in the past. So it certainly has changed the game. And you do. I mean, the bottom position is one that nobody really talks about. Because it's not cool, it's not flashy, it's just getting out. But in order to win championships, you got to be able to get out from underneath, or you forfeit that point potentially when it's your decision and you have to go neutral.
Look at Micah Jordan in the semis against Nolf. You know, I thought that maybe Micah Jordan could hang with Nolf on his feet, but that was the one key area where I thought Nolf might chew him up on top, and he certainly did. He got on top and turned him, 3-4 times, and all of a sudden it's a shutout tech fall.
Yeah.
That was a big one for Penn State.
Yeah, they needed him. Because there was one area where you say, hey, if Penn State might falter, it might be Nolf because of the injury, and comes through, wins another NCAA championship. Just a nice run for him to overcome that injury and look solid throughout. You saw his level of skill throughout the NCAA championships, that he really is the guy at 157. Nobody could hang with him. Pretty remarkable.
Got to have some mental strength too to go through what he went through and be able to. I don't think he was. I don't think he was 100%. I don't think I don't know what he was. Was he 90, 80%? But Man, when you've got a guy with his mind and his creativity and ability to adapt, you just figure out a way. And I think we saw more of Jason Nolf's top position skills at the NCAA championships than what we've seen through this run. Because you're so accustomed to seeing him like just piling them up the points on his feet and getting into scrambles and scoring points that way, just, you know, high-paced stuff on his feet. But tremendous testament to his versatility and ability to adapt as a wrestler to win the way that he won.
7 out of 8 championships for Penn State. When will it end? They have so much coming. They have so much back. Can this go on for another 5, 6, 7, 8 years? Is it possible that they get to 10 and break that streak that Dan Gable and Iowa had a few years ago?
Well, it doesn't look like it's slowing down anytime soon. I mean, you got Joseph and Mark Hall for 2 more years. You got Nickel and Nolf next year. Nick Lee, just a freshman this year. Look at the recruiting class on the way. I mean, maybe, you know, I think some people would probably argue that it's the best recruiting class in college wrestling history when you start stacking up, the level of talent. I mean, Aaron Brooks, cadet world champion, Brody Teske, 4-time Iowa State champion, Gavin Teasdale, 4-time PA state champion, Roman Bravo Young, 4-time Arizona state champion, Joe Lee, Nick Lee's, you know, younger brother, Seth Neville's 4-time California state champion, the 3rd 4-timer and California state champion, coming in, Nick Neville's his younger brother, a loaded class. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody that
still,
I named there,
but you named.
It's an incredible recruiting class, and you know that there's more coming after that. Adam Buziello, from New York, one of the top 126 pounders, is just a junior. So he's committed as well. It's, you know, an embarrassment of riches right now in Happy Valley. And, I don't see it really slowing down anytime soon, because the one thing that Kale and company have shown is they can attract top level talent. And, you know, they're at the point now, like, you know, that's where people want to be. And so, you know, are there going to be guys that want to go elsewhere? Yeah. Spencer Lee went elsewhere. Travis Whitlake went elsewhere. You know, Kyle Snyder went elsewhere when it was his choice. They're going to be guys that find better fits elsewhere. You know, the question is can Iowa, Ohio State, Oklahoma State, any other programs out there, can they attract enough of those guys? Can they develop? Can they do enough to get over the top? Because this was the year for Ohio State.
Yeah.
You know, 3 4-time All-Americans, never been done before in the sport. You got, bookends with Tomasello at the front, Snyder at the back. You get 2 top transfers to come in and, Joey McKenna and Tashan Campbell to supplement that an already strong lineup, 10 strong, 8 All-Americans, and it's still not enough.
And Penn State loses Nick Seriano.
Yeah.
I mean, yep. Throw that in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this was the year. You can look back at a lot of little places along the way. We talked about the flurry at 184, and that was obviously the nail in the coffin right there. But one of the ones to me that was super important is when Keyshawn Hayes in the quarterfinals against Troy Heilman had a potential reversal in the tiebreaker, didn't get it. Not only didn't get it, wound up in the same position, no loss of control, and Heilman wins 2-1 in the tiebreaker. So instead of picking up 7 points right there and moving on to the semis and assuring yourself of a top 6 finish, and if he gets beat there on the front side by Rutherford, at least he still has 2 matches on the back Saturday morning, you know, more opportunities to score points. Instead, he drops down to consolations and hits Brandon Sorensen, you know, on the back, and Sorensen rolled him up, I think 9-0. And so Keyshawn Hayes was done at that point. And that was, if you look back at the turning point, Ohio State was up 29.5 going into the 149 pound quarterfinals. They were up 29.5 points over Penn State at that point. They were 22-1 in the tournament at that point. They went 19-15 the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. And that 29.5 point lead turned into about a 26 point deficit at one point Friday night. So crazy how fast the pendulum swung back in Penn State's favor. you know, from that the 149 pound quarters on.
Iowa deserves a lot of credit. They placed third with 97 points, five All-Americans. What'd you say, 30.5?
30.5 bonus points, most since for the Hawkeyes since 1997, Gable's last season. And we're not accustomed to seeing, you know, in recent years, we haven't been accustomed to seeing Iowa put up big-time bonus points at the national tournament. I think you got to go back to 2010 when, you know, their last title team where they were putting up, you know, a good amount of bonus points. And, you know, but when you add Spencer and then he goes tech fall, and then Sam Stoll wins the Guerrerian and Marinelli registers a couple pins and Kemmerer a couple pins, all of a sudden, you know, even guys like Mitch Bowman comes out, gets a major and a tech fall at a weight where I can't imagine a lot of people were projecting that Mitch Bowman would score like 4.5 points or whatever it was he scored. But I think what you're seeing is, you know, when you get a lightweight catalyst like that at the front of your lineup and a guy that is going out and putting up big time points just about every time out, that it becomes infectious. And we saw some other guys, you know, putting some big time points on the board. And the best part about it, if you're a Hawkeye fan, is you got Spencer for three more go rounds. You got Marinelli for three more years. You got Kemmerer for two more years. You got Stoll coming back next year. You throw in Jacob Warner, Pat Lugo, Max Murin. And that's a squad that is going to be right in the mix again next year, I think, you know, for a trophy. And can they put together 10 strong weights and, the key for Iowa next year is can they get more guys in the semifinals alongside Spencer Lee? Because that's what it's going to take.
Story of the tournament, Kyle Connell upsets Colin Moore twice, beats him in the quarterfinals. He's unseeded. I think he had 10 losses on the season going in, ends up with 11. But he won over that crowd, not only with the pin, but then his interview afterward. I think he was the story of the tournament. What a great kid, what a great storyline at the NCAA Championships, and another guy that really derailed Ohio State's chances being in-state. It's interesting that it happened that way, but Kyle Connell, one of those guys, ends up third place, and it's kind of a Ray Brinzer type of mentality there, where afterward kids are wanting his autograph, he plays third, but he really won over the crowd at that tournament.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be living in the back of his truck like Prince or anything like that. But
as
yeah.
As far as placing third and having an autograph line.
Exactly, that's a good point. You know, such a great story, too. I mean, he's not even on the team last year.
Yeah.
And something decides else. He misses it and comes back and unseated, has a pigtail, wins 3-2 in the pigtail round, then takes out Preston Weigel and gets on a pretty good run. And yeah, he's a guy, though, you know, I get a chance to watch him down at the South Beach Duels, and he was wrestling Ben Darmstadt, the 2 seed from Cornell at that tournament or at that event, and Cornell was up, I think, 6-1 with about 30 seconds to go in the second period on Darmstadt, and then Darmstadt gets a reversal and then picks top and goes to work on top, and it goes from 6-1 to 13-6 in a matter of 2.5 minutes, but man, he's a specimen physically and has some upper body skills that, you know, we saw on display in the quarterfinal round, the way he tossed Colin Moore and tremendous story. Him and Tariq Wilson, another unseeded guy.
Go through that situation. Cade Brock tech falls him
in January.
January.
And, it was interesting. The 133 pound quarters, you had DeSanto 22-10 in Vegas over Stevan Micic, and then Micic turns around and wins 13-1 with some penalty points in there at the end too for some extracurriculars where things got a little out of hand. But and then Wilson gets beat 16-1 over in Italy by Cade Brock, and then he turns around and majors him in the quarterfinals. And then we mentioned he scored the 5 takedowns against Seth Gross in the semis, and it still wasn't enough. Was he in for takedown number 6 and just wasn't able to elevate? If he would have come up off the mat with that thing and he would have had a chance to finish, but instead Gross uses some of his top flight scrambling skills and pins him. But those two guys were tremendous stories coming back and wrestling the way they did on the backside you know, Wilson comes back and takes third, major decision over Luke Pletcher, 17-8 to take third at 133. And both Ohio kids coming home, getting a little bit of that Cleveland magic.
All right, how about a storyline that I didn't know about, wrestling country didn't know about? Did you see anything like that where there was maybe a hidden storyline that didn't make it to the big stage, but it was kind of cool? Anything that strikes you?
Maybe
a match
that was
good, or a team that maybe got an All-American that we haven't talked about. I just want to make sure we kind of go through the list of
these
NCAA championships.
These are ones that I'm going to probably remember like an hour after we sign off, or five minutes after we sign off, and wish that I'd said something. But I just think that looking down the team race, I mean, Michigan and NC State tying for the final trophy spot at 80 points. And, you know, I'm working on a piece right now that'll go up on Track Wrestling here some point this week about just like kind of the key pivotal moments in the team trophy races. And one of them, Adam Kuhn in the quarterfinals, up 4-0 on Nathan Butler of Stanford, 3 seconds to go, and they are on their feet. And Butler tries a lateral drop, and Adam Kuhn pins him in 3 seconds. And that's 2 points. And Michigan and NC State wind up in a tie. So that was a key point, I think. Missouri, certainly not the tournament that they wanted, with 61.5 points, but to come back and get sixth after a really, really rough Thursday morning session where they lose John Ernesty. He gets beat by Tariq Wilson. The 5 seed goes down, and then the 2 seed Joey LaValle goes down at 157 pounds and doesn't make the stand. So Missouri coming back, getting sixth. Cornell having a nice run to seventh. Nebraska has not been in the top, I want to say probably not even the top 15 all season long. And then a tremendous tournament for the Huskers. Chad Redd getting beat first round in a really tough part of the bracket. We talked about the quad in that bracket, and you had Brock Zackerl and Mason Smith and Tommy Thorne, a returning All-American, those four. And one of those was not making it out. One of those four guys was going 0-2, and it was Tommy Thorne. Red gets beat first round, comes back, beats Thorne, knocks him out of the tournament, comes back, pins Dean Heil in the round of 12 and takes seventh. I think, at that weight class also, one of the great stories that we haven't talked about yet, Sedarian Perry from Eastern Michigan, and comes in the tournament losing record, becomes the first All-American in Eastern Michigan history in the last, since 1999?
It's been a while.
So, that was a tremendous story. Hopefully he's not the last All-American in Eastern Michigan history. That would be devastating if he was. Hopefully that, wrestling people can rally the troops out there and find a way to save that program.
Yeah. South Dakota State gets its first Division I NCAA wrestling champion in Seth Gross. And then at 197, it's the first time that two wrestlers from the ACC meet in the finals. Mike Machiavello and Jared Haught from Virginia Tech meet in the finals. And then there's going to be a program added. Little Rock adds a Division I wrestling. So great story there that we get a chance. Greg Hatcher just always doing great things for Arkansas, and they add a Division I program. So we gain one, we lose one. Hopefully we get Eastern Michigan back. I don't know how that's going to go, but we keep battling. That's the important part. And having another Division I program is big for our sport.
How about not just having a Division I program, but having one that's coming in fully funded and some resources to do some things.
I mean, unreal.
The amount of money, Greg Hatcher ponying up $1.4 million behind this, a $1.4 million gift to Little Rock. And, they're going to be fully funded at 9.9 scholarships. They're going to have, from talking to their administration in Cleveland, they're going to have a top flight facility. They're going at this thing. They're not just having a wrestling program to have a wrestling program and to have another varsity sport. They want to be competitive. And to see what the growth of wrestling in the state of Arkansas, 13 years ago, there were no high school or college programs. Now you're looking at like 65 high school programs, 13 college teams down there with a D1 program on the way. That's pretty incredible. And now you start looking at, if you're a kid in Texas, you got another option. Nearby, you don't have to go all the way across the country, or Texas. You got Oklahoma State, and that's otherwise you're getting into a pretty lengthy car ride to your nearest Division I program. Now you got Little Rock there. I think that it's going to be great for wrestling in that region of the country, and hopefully we see some more. I'm going to make a prediction that in the next two years we have another Division I program popping up somewhere. Yep, that there will be another Division I.
Okay, so with Little Rock, let's wait this. What do you think? Do you think Pat Smith is going to be the head wrestling coach there at Little Rock?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he's going to probably be – his name's going to certainly pop up. Is that something that he wants?
Yeah, I have no
idea. I don't either. I don't know. I mean, sometimes, you know, with a lot of club coaches, I know a lot – you know, some club coaches that are perfectly content doing what they're doing and have no desire whatsoever to get into the D1 game and the amount of hours – and the stress that comes with that. And so I don't know. I think he'll be a name that'll be mentioned. I think there will also be some top flight Division I assistants that you see in the mix for that. And then also, you look around the country, some guys that are doing some tremendous coaching jobs that aren't at 9.9 or maybe don't have the financial backing, the administrative support that Little Rock is willing to put forth. So I'm fascinated to see what kind of coaching pool that they're choosing from and also who winds up with it and where that program goes in the next 5 to 10 years.
And Presbyterian getting a program. I think that's cool too.
Yeah.
What did they do? I mean, you have two added right now within the last few months, and then you have Eastern Michigan dropping. So we have a net gain of one, and it sounds like there's going to be one in your mind in the next year or two. So hopefully we keep adding instead of a trend of going backwards with Boise State and Eastern Michigan. Let's keep adding programs.
Yeah, and let's hopefully see some out in the out west, preferably in the Pacific Northwest. You know, if we could get something back in Idaho,
it'd be awesome.
That would be great. Just the amount of stress that it puts on programs out west when something gets dropped. You know, when Boise gets dropped, all of a sudden, like now you got Oregon State out on an island almost up there in the Pacific Northwest by themselves. You know, the challenge of getting teams to come out and wrestle, really difficult when you talk about having to go all the way out there and you can't catch somebody else, you know, on a van ride or something like that, you know. And I remember back years ago where I think Iowa went out on a West Coast road trip, maybe like 99, 2000, something like that, and hit, if I'm not mistaken, hit Oregon State, or at least wrestled a couple duels out there where, you know, they just hopped in a van and went from one place to the next. And, you know, you can't do that anymore. And so it's not like we have infinite budgets either in this sport. So hopefully we get some more programs added out west. That'd be tremendous.
Although we didn't lose the programs, we did lose a couple great coaches in Joe McFarland and Barry Davis. Joe McFarland was at Michigan. We just had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He was a great coach and a rival to Barry Davis in college as an athlete and as a coach. Barry Davis was at Wisconsin. Those are some interesting openings. I think Michigan, it's pretty clear who's going to fit in there. I don't know that it's necessarily on the books yet what's going to happen there, but I'm assuming Sean Bormet will be there. And Wisconsin's pretty open-ended right now. Not sure who's going to be the guy there, but it's always fascinating to me when there's a job opening of that kind to see who's going to fit in there and what direction they're going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And what kind of support do they get from the administration? And you know, how committed is the administration to building a top-flight program? You know, you got top-notch facilities up there, and certainly in the Big Ten, and wrestling is improving, it seems, in Wisconsin. The amount of talent coming out of there. I think, one guy whose name will be brought up or has already been brought up, Ben Askren, you know, what he's doing with the Askren Wrestling Academy up there. They're producing some top-notch individuals. And one of the things this year, though, I look at the state of Wisconsin, and, you know, I mentioned Ben Askren. He went out of state, became a star at Missouri. Matt Pell, a Wisconsin native. Mm-hmm. Alex Derringer goes down to Oklahoma State, wins 3 NCAA titles. And then even fast forward it to this year, you know, Eric Barnett, one of the top little guys in the country, committed to North Carolina. Keaton Cleaver, one of the top heavyweights in Wisconsin, also going to North Carolina. Peyton Mako, guy that wrestles for Askren, going to Missouri. So it's going to be instrumental in the building of the Wisconsin program to keep those top flight individuals at home.
Isn't it amazing when you listed that off, what you just said there, how we're in a trend right now where I think we identify these kids coming out of high school more with their club program than we do with their high school. I know for me with Spencer Lee and a lot of the guys that came out of the Strip Matter program, I identify them with Jody Strip Matter more than I do the high school. And I think there's a real trend there and how they're getting built and developed.
How about Young Guns? Three NCAA champs coming out of Jody Strip Matter's club.
There you go.
If you would add the points up together, if they could build a team with all those guys at different weights, they would have finished third. They would have tied Iowa for third.
Isn't that, that's unreal.
Yeah.
But it's the club programs are driving this trend of why I think we're so successful and why we're in that phase of maybe the best era in our sport is I think the clubs have a lot to do with
Absolutely. Clubs, just, regional training centers. I mean, look at Jody's club, with what's coming out of his club. I mean, at one point here, a couple years ago, four years ago, he had nine guys who were ranked in the top three nationally at their weight classes. And those guys are all scrapping together. This year at the NCAA Championships, 157, Nolf, Kemmerer, Shields, three of the eight All-Americans, the 3, 4, and 6 seeds, all Young Guns guys that grew up tangling with each other. Jared Lawrence, Brandon Paulson with Pinnacle. Just so many guys that, I'm not sure it really existed 20 years ago when 18 years ago or so when Jody and Jared Lawrence were in college. I'm not sure that what kind of club system they had growing up, and now the access to video, the access to high-level coaching at a young age, the regional training centers, the ability for these guys to get out and scrap against each other in high school a lot more. I think it's a lot more prevalent. So I think just so many factors are changing the game, and that's why wrestling's at a higher level. It's incredible right now.
Yeah, because when they announced, I want to say they had their Young Gun hats on or their shirts. When some of those guys, whether it was Gavin Teasdale or I think maybe even Spencer Lee, I think they were wearing Young Guns gear instead of their high school gear. And I think that really speaks volumes to the influence of these club programs. And we could go through a litany of coaches that are doing that and have a successful club program, but hey, it ain't just going into the high school program for that period of time and getting good. It's a year round process right now, as a testament to what we have upcoming. And the season doesn't slow down. You have Folkstyle Nationals coming to the Dome. You have the World Cup. You just have all these tournaments, World Team Trials. It really doesn't end. There's not much of a break as far as being a fan or being a competitor anymore. It's a pretty remarkable time.
Yeah, it's you're preaching to the choir right now, man. It never ends, and I'm okay with that. It's right on from folk style now, college season, right into the high school postseason, and some of the top notch tournaments that we have coming up, then right into World Cup and the freestyle season, the Fargo qualifiers, and the U.S. Open, and then World Team Trials going to be coming up, and not long after that, World Championships. So. And we'll go straight from those right back into the college season.
I love it. It just brings a smile to my face because I think we're both of that opinion, or I don't even want to say opinion or that lifestyle, that I just don't want to be out of this sport. I love this sport and what it means. And neither of us have a wrestling background per se, as far as just competition, but we've gotten heavily involved and you buy into what this sport means, and it's remarkable what this sport does for people and the community it builds. And I just wouldn't want any other way. I'm so proud to be a part of the sport and to have these opportunities in a great sport like this. Hope everyone gets to experience it. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned like our competitive backgrounds are pretty limited. Although you got a bracket sheet up in the office from what, like
second grade
tournament. Yeah. Or you just lit people up.
Yeah, it was pretty dominating. I'm pretty proud of that.
But I think I like how much this sport has changed me for the better, from just having a seat on the periphery, and being around some pretty influential people in the sport too, and how that has shaped me and molded my career. And I'll be eternally grateful for having the opportunities that I've had in this sport.
Yeah, it's unreal to to have those, like you say, opportunities. But I think going back to a comment you made is that you had a chance to be in football and wrestling, and you just saw the difference between what football is and what wrestling is. And I think you saw that wrestling really is a sport that stands out from the rest.
Yeah, and I think it's just there's something about it that's addicting. You know, I think back to, you know, like what you're referring to, and we've talked about this on different interviews in the past where we talked. You know, I was 16 years old, and all I wanted to do was cover Division I football. I wanted to cover college football. I wanted to cover Iowa football. And, you know, my goal was to get the Iowa beat by the time I was 30, and I got it at 26 at the Iowa City Press Citizen. But by that time, I was already 4 years into covering college wrestling, covering high school and college wrestling, and I was already hooked by then. And I never felt like I got the same kind of I never developed the same kind of love for covering college football as I did for covering college wrestling and high school wrestling. I just felt like, you know, when I would go into that Iowa room, I knew the fifth string 157 pounder better than I knew anybody on the football team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd go in there and people would be like genuinely interested in what was going on in your life. And some of my closest friends that I have today are people that I have met through wrestling. And, you know, we just mentioned Jody Stripmatter and that first Iowa team, you know, Jody Stripmatter, Eric Juergens, Doug Schwab, Mike Zadick, Jessamyn Smith, you know, people that I've remained pretty close to, you know, even now 18, 20 years later. So it's been an awesome ride for me. And I look, you know, I'll look down through my Facebook friends, you know, my Facebook feed, when I hop on there or even, you know, scrolling through my contacts in my phone, and like, you know, the vast majority of my closest friends now are people that I've met through this sport.
And you talk about addicting. I think that what's cool is when you have athletes from other sports get addicted.
Yeah.
And I think you have a story. I can't think of his name right now. I think he played for the Colts, was an Iowa player.
Pat Anger.
And tell that story. That's a great story about a guy that's addicted to wrestling.
I think you're referring to the Orange Bowl, right? Like when Orange Bowl... Pat Anger was a senior. I was getting ready to play Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl back in 2009. It would have been the 2010 Orange Bowl. And there are these one-on-one media sessions. This would have been like, I think probably December 29th or 30th, because Midlands was going on. And there were probably 15 reporters crowded around Pat and his podium that he was at. And he says to me, I asked a question. He goes, "Enough football talk. What's going on at Midlands right now?" So he stops the whole thing for probably about two or three minutes to get the update on what was going on at Midlands. And there were a couple instances like that where, you know, I would interview Pat and he would stop like the interview and say, like, "This is enough football talk. What's going on with in the wrestling world right now?" He's a guy who wrestled. He wrestled at Bettendorf High School. You know, I also think of guys like, you know, Chad Greenway, who longtime, linebacker for the, you know, the Vikings, and, tremendous pro career, pro bowler. And, you know, the other night, I'm going to dig up the tweet here, but, the other night he was, after the finals, tweeted something about Spencer Lee. I'm going to pull it up here.
Yeah. But I love
Spencer
that.
Lee, B.A. mofo.
I mean, it's, I love it.
The fact, yeah, the guys on the periphery are plugged into what's going on in the wrestling world. I think that's really cool. I think it's cool that, I don't know if he was there this year, but Brian Ferentz, offensive coordinator for the Hawkeyes, back when he was an assistant with the Patriots, and even when, you know, he's been an assistant with the Hawkeyes, I think, you know, you'd look up at the NCAA championships and he'd be sitting in the Iowa section. He'd come back from, you know, breaks with the Patriots in the spring. He would be there in the Iowa section watching the NCAA wrestling. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. And I can vividly remember, this would have been 10, 15 years ago. I'm standing in the ice cream line. I think it was in St. Louis, and there's Ronnie Lott just standing there. And I say, "Hey, can I get my picture with you?" This is pre cell phone era. He's like, "Yeah, as long as you don't get me out of my ice cream line, I'm good." So I took a picture with him. But that's who you see there. You just don't know who's going to show up, whether it's Bobby Stoops or Ronnie Lott or Pat Anger, just names. Billy Baldwin's there. It's just a pretty amazing group of people. And it is addicting. I love this sport, and I love what it it brings and just the different aspects. It's not just college wrestling. It's the youth and the international and even the veterans. That's just a fascinating sport in every level. And as we end with this, I think maybe one of the most fascinating, I don't know that I've had a story like this that just captured me, was the Teague Moore story we had.
Oh,
go back
wow.
And go back and listen to that podcast with Teague Moore. I mean, that blew me away. Can wow. you believe that? Almost not winning the NCAA championships 20 years ago because you got in trouble and had to go before a panel at, what, 20, I think he said?
Because he kicked a table, and a laptop went flying. God. And broke a laptop.
That blew me away. I don't know that we can top that story on this show. We'll keep trying.
Right. Yeah.
But that was just an incredible interview. All those guys were fantastic. And it just goes back to that. What a testament. We had four guys that are big name coaches that just gave us their time for that hour and a half. And they were gracious enough to come up there and just talk candidly. Those are four head coaches in our sport. And it wasn't like we had to go through their SID. We just had Shane Sparks go snag them. And it was a lot of fun to have that show. And I'd recommend anyone go back to listen to that because the coaches really were candid and gave us a lot of great content.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We got to close this show out. We've had a great post-NCAA championship show for Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.